So welcome back. So we continue with our second section. In the first session, basically I talked about the three modes and how they shape our self-understanding. In the mode of ignorance, we look at our negatives and beat ourselves up. In the mode of passion, we just look at our positives and bloat ourselves up. In the mode of goodness, we are more realistic and holistic in assessing ourselves. So now, before we move forward, I said that the modes affect the mind, and let's understand how this mind works, by which we will be able to understand how the modes are working on us, and then we can endeavor to correct their working. So our existence is three-dimensional presently. There's the body, mind and soul. So we could say they're like the hardware, the software and the user in a computer system. So the hardware is like the, what is the hardware like?
Body.
The body, yeah. The software is the mind and the soul is the user, yes. So now in this case, if we consider the software, it is vital for us to use the hardware. So if a person is using a computer system, their performance is shaped not just by how good they as a programmer are. It's also what kind of program is there, what kind of device is there. If a device has a particular speed, and even if the programmer is very good, the person cannot work faster than what the device is working. So from the functional perspective, that programmer, the program and the device, all three are one unit. Similarly, at present in our embodied condition, we are souls, but the soul, body, mind together are one functional unit. And we need to see that we understand ourselves as souls, but we also understand the body and the mind so that we can function properly. Now, to understand what the mind is, let's do a simple thought experiment. So wherever you are, you can sit comfortably and then you can close your eyes. Now with your eyes closed, you can take three deep breaths. One, two, three. Now can continue your deep breathing, and while you are breathing deeply with your eyes closed, try to look at what you see in front of you. Because your eyes are closed, you can't see physically what is in front of you, but there is as if a screen inside you, and on that screen various images come. You may see an image of this room or of your home, of your car, of a loved one, or of your phone, or various images may keep coming and going on that inner screen. Or you might just see a dull haze of colors on that inner screen. Whatever it is that you particularly see, there is a screen on which you see it. Now, while you are observing this inner screen, try to take a step back and look at who is it that is looking at that inner screen. Try to take a step back and try to catch sight of the inner seer who is observing that inner screen. Try once again, take a step back and see the inner seer. No matter how many steps you take backwards, the inner seer steps back with you. What you are looking for is what you are looking with. You are that inner seer. You are the soul. And the inner screen is your mind. You can take one deep breath and then you can open your eyes. Thank you. So now, when you're looking at me, I'm looking at you. There is, this we can say is the outer scene. So for proper perception to take place, is the inner seer, the inner screen, and the outer scene. All three have to be in line. And that's when we can perceive things. However, this inner screen is very versatile. It is meant to normally act like a window. Not just a simple window, but a sophisticated window which integrates window inputs from the outer world and displays them. But sometimes this inner screen can become like a TV. I was at one devotee's house and they had a big window, but that glass of the window was designed in such a way that at one moment it can act like a window, but if a remote you change it, then that window screen becomes a TV screen. And so they were just showing how optical illusions are created. And there's a nice greenery behind outside the window, big window, and you can see the greenery. And while you're just talking, you just press one button, and somebody else may, that remote may be a small device somewhere, it's not even seen. They press the button, and suddenly, just outside that window, it's as if you see a huge gorilla who's about to pounce in, smashing at the glass. Actually, there's no gorilla out there, just outside the house. What has happened? They had created such a way that it was now acting as a TV, and on that TV screen, there's a gorilla in a similar wilderness. So it appears as if that gorilla is just out there outside the house. So basically, the inner screen is versatile. At one moment, it is acting like a window. At another moment, it becomes like a TV. Say we go to office and the boss looks at us with a strange look in the eyes. And immediately, why is my boss looking like this? Is he going to fire me? Oh no, if I am fired, how will I pay the mortgage of my house? If I can't pay the mortgage of my house, I'll be evicted. If I'm evicted, I'll have to find another house. Oh, if I can't find that house, I'll be on the streets. And it's so cold. How will I live in the streets in the cold? Right now, I may be feeling cold because of the AC. But what has happened? The mind has started a movie, and in that movie, I am out on the streets in the cold. So at one moment, the mind was a screen where I was looking at my boss. But that one look in the eyes of the boss started off a movie. And when the mind is acting as a window to the outer world, and when it has become a TV screen taking us off somewhere else, that it's, unless we are very perceptive, we don't catch it. We just get carried away by it. Suppose we are at our home watching TV and a thief sneaks in. And thief looks around, I want to steal something. And a thief comes in and says, the most expensive thing here is a TV. They come and pick up the TV. And say, if there's a very exciting cricket match going on, so then we are so caught in the cricket match that when the TV starts moving, instead of seeing the thief and stopping the thief, we also start walking along, keep watching the TV. So that's how our mind, sometimes we just get captivated by the mind. So various things will appear on the inner screen. And we have to actually be evaluating whether what is appearing on the inner screen is real or it is just is fictional. Fictional means, yeah, okay, I may be fired in future, but it may happen, it may not happen. So it right now it's just fictional. So if we consider this metaphor of the inner screen, then if this inner screen goes into the past, or it goes into the future. When it goes into the future and starts thinking, this may go wrong, that may go wrong, that may go wrong, that may go wrong, that causes anxiety. Anxiety results when the inner screen of the mind, instead of acting like a window, becomes a TV and starts broadcasting a horror movie. In which, in that horror movie, we are not the spectators, we are the victims. This may go wrong, that may go wrong, that may go wrong. And we just get completely overwhelmed, paralyzed. Or, sometimes, this inner screen can go off into the past. And it starts again becoming a TV screen, which starts replaying the movie reels of all the bad things that have happened in our life. No, this happened like that. This person did like that. This went like that. This went wrong. You made a mess over here. It's like that. When all the bad things that are happening, that have happened, it was in our life in the past, when they start getting replayed, that's when we get depression. So anxiety happens when the mind goes off into the future and starts painting all worst case scenarios from the future. And depression happens when the mind goes off into the past and starts replaying all the bad things that have happened. And then we start thinking, oh, so many bad things happened in my life. Future is going to be more of the same only. Now, of course, depression in some cases can also be a clinical condition which may require medication. But that is exceptional. Most often when we use the word depression, it's just we're feeling negative, we're feeling bad, we're feeling hopeless, we're feeling dejected. That happens primarily because we're replaying the bad things that have happened in our life. Now, the fact is that everyone in life has had bad things happen to them. If we consider the very fact that we are alive right now means some good things have happened in our life. Isn't it? Most of us, as I said, 30, 35, 40, 50, whatever our age may be. You know, there are so many people who die before the age of 30. The fact that we are alive means something good has happened. Not only are we alive, most of us are reasonably healthy. We are well to do. There are so many things which are right in our life. But when the inner screen starts showing all the bad things that have happened, that's when we get depression. So these are two broad patterns that the mind may go, the mind is the inner screen. It may go off into the past or it may go off into the future. Now, where it goes off depends on the modes. If we consider, if we have a TV at home, on that TV there are certain channels. Now some channels may be having horror movies. Some channels may be having very violent action movies. Now if you have kids at our home, you say, no, we don't want to watch this. So some channels may have very explicit romantic or sexual movies. Some channels may have sports, some channel may have news, some channel may have some spiritual stuff going on, spiritual subject matters being displayed. So there are various channels. And if we go home and the TV is on, we don't just look at the program, we also look at, okay, which channel is going on over here, isn't it? So then if our children are watching TV, we say, okay, don't watch this, you can watch this. We might create some filters by which certain channels don't come to our home if we don't want our kids to watch that. So basically, when something is going on the TV, we don't just start watching it. Especially if somebody else is watching it and we are responsible for that person. We look at, okay, what is going on? Before we get engrossed in the show, we try to evaluate the show. Okay, what program is this? Which channel is this? And should you be watching this? Should you not be watching it? So similarly, if instead of becoming engrossed with the mind, we first evaluate what is getting displayed on the mind. Then we will be able to protect ourselves from much unwanted anxiety and trouble. However, because the mind is a screen inside us, we get carried away by it. Something appears and you just get carried away. So we might come to our home in a cheerful mood and then some, say, tragedy movie is going on. And I start watching that, and within 2-3 minutes, our mood may also become very somber. Or, you know, we might again be in a cheerful, lively mood, and we come and a horror movie is going on, and we may also start trembling. So, with respect to a physical TV and a physical movement, we easily understand that, okay, that TV is there, I am here, and I can choose whether to watch the TV or not. But with respect to our inner screen, at one moment we might be in a very good mood. You know, we come to the temple, we have heard some nice class, had nice kirtan, we are feeling very good, peaceful, spiritual. And then suddenly we see some person. Say that person has hurt us, insulted us, and immediately a movie starts off. They did like this to me. And how dare they do like this? What a terrible person they are. You know, in future I'm going to show them. I do this. Within 1 minute, you know, we might be just breathing heavily, our fists might be clenched, our teeth might be gnawing. You're angry. Now, actually, nothing happened. In a sense that, it's not that the person has come and attacked us. It's just that our mind has suddenly started broadcasting a movie. We could call this, say, the revenge fantasy. Or we all have a channel within us. We can call it the resentment channel. Oh, this person did like this, this person did like that. We are resentful of it. So, how many of you had this experience that you are cheerful sometime and then suddenly within moments, your mood changed suddenly? How many of you had this experience like that? Isn't it? Yeah. It's just so drastic it happens that one time I was in America, I was giving a class. And just before that class, one devotee from India had written a mail that I found infuriating. I said, how dare I write like that? I was so upset by that mail. It was accusing me of something which was completely baseless. And I thought he also knows it is wrong. Anyway, so I was so upset by that. And then I had to give a class. So I gave a class there. And after the class, there are question answers. And now in question answers, the most people, they want to ask questions so that they can understand things. They can gain knowledge. There are some people who ask questions not to gain knowledge but to display knowledge. So they will ask a question only for 15 minutes. The question is go on and on and on and on. And then at the end they say, now I'll summarize my question. I said, no, I'll summarize. So, there's this person, after the class, they're just going on and on, so asking the question. So now if we've been speaking for 15-20 years, then we understand, you know, who are actually seeking to understand, who are just trying to just, you know, show off their knowledge. So then we would rather spend time with people who want to gain some knowledge. So there's this person, and I was just trying to politely end the conversation with them so that I could move on. And then as I was doing that, it just struck me, this person is right next to me over here, and I don't want to spend more time than necessary with them. But that person is all the way in India. I'm thousands of miles away in America, but, you know, in my mind, I'm arguing with that person. How dare you write like this? You know, could you think of this? How did you do like this? So I said, if I'm not ready to give my time physically to this person right here, why I'm so cautious that I should not give my time, waste my time over this person, then why am I wasting my time on that person? No. Why should I give my... Actually, we give our time not just physically by how we interact with people, we give our time mentally also. Many times we feel that, you know, I don't have time. Sometimes we want to practice spiritual life also, we feel, hey, I don't have time to study scripture, I don't have time to come to a temple, I don't have the time to chant. Yes, we all are very hard-pressed for time. That is true. And we have a lot of things to do. But actually, our time is taken not just by our activities. Our time is taken also by our thoughts. The same example, if we are going to a, if we are doing some course, maybe in college or as a part of our professional training, we are attending a class. And just before that class, we see acquaintance and we greet them. And they just snub us and go away. immediately, how dare you snub me like this? And then that interaction might happen in 10 seconds. But then throughout the whole class, the mind is going, next time at the biggest party in my company, I will publicly snub them. You know, the mind is replaying and replaying a fantasy, a revenge fantasy. And that whole hour, we don't hear one word in the class. So from the physical activity point of view, we spend that hour in the class. But we didn't get anything from it. That one thought of revenge, it just took hour, it took the whole hour. And sometimes not just hours, it can take hours and hours, and sometimes people hold on to grudges for not just hours but for years. Sometimes there are some families, they have revenge sagas, you know. They buy your grandfather this my grandfather. Therefore, I'm going to do this to you. It just goes on and on. So basically, I'm making this point that even thoughts take time. And when we practice bhakti, we get better understanding of where our thoughts are going. We get better greater capacity to manage our thoughts. And so in that sense, actually bhakti, it will save our time. It will save the time that we waste on unwanted thoughts, on waste thoughts. So more about bhakti I'll talk later. But here, the point which I'm making is that this inner screen starts a movie suddenly. And we don't even realize it. So in this case, for me, the physical contrast between how I was not ready to spend too much time with this person and the mental, in contrast with how mentally I was sparring with this person, arguing with this person for so long, that just struck me at that time. But for all of us, you know, our mind also has its channels. And channels, just like TV has channels. So based on our particular conditioning, we may have a particular channel. Say, we can identify, oh, this is the resentment channel. Why did he do like this? Why did he do like that? This is the revenge channel. You know, I'm going to do this to you. I'm going to do this to you. This could be the depression channel. You know, okay, you know, this went wrong, that went wrong, that went wrong, that went wrong. This could be the worry channel. You know, all this can go wrong, that can go wrong, that can go wrong, that can go wrong. So we might come in this could be something else, this could be the craving channel. No, I have not got this, I have not got it. When will I get this? When will I get this? When will I get this? So we go through our life normally, but while we are going through our life, in our inner screen, there is something else which will be going on entirely. And what goes on in our inner screen affects us of sometimes much more than what is going on in the outer scene. That's why we might just come in a cheerful mood, say from the temple to the home, but in one moment, say the depression channel starts off inside us. And if we don't understand, oh, this is a depression channel, I don't want to watch this. If we don't understand this, if we don't identify it, we start watching it. Then within a few minutes, our whole cheerful mood will disappear and we will end up depressed. So, if we talk about self-conceptions, we also have certain self-conceptions. So each self-conception, we could say, is like a channel on our TV. You know, if there is a multiplex where there are many movies going on in the theater. So sometimes if there are four theaters within a multiplex, one theater might just be having always action movies. Another might just be always having tragedies. One might be having horror movies. Another might be having adult movies. So that is the characteristic of that theater. Once we go into that theater, if it's a horror movie theater, we are going to see horror movies. So like that, we could compartmentalize our mind. But there are certain channels within it. So in this situation, the mind starts a horror movie. In this situation, it starts the depression movie. So if we, instead of identifying the mind, instead of identifying with the mind, we identify the mind. Identify by the mind means that that's the mind speaking. Actually, this I will elaborate on much more in our next session. But what do I mean? Suppose I am feeling angry. instead of, okay, the mind is saying, I am feeling angry. If you just preface it that way, whatever thoughts come in our mind, I want to eat this. No, suppose I have diabetes, I am not meant to eat sugar. No, I want to eat some sweets. Yes, if I say, I want to eat the sweets, I say, no, I cannot eat. Why cannot I not eat? Why can I not eat? I want to eat. But as soon as we preface, instead of identifying, I want to eat the sweet, a thought comes, I want to eat the sweet, we preface it with, the mind is saying, I want to eat the sweet. So if we just preface it that way, whatever thoughts come within us, instead of identifying with them, we identify them. As soon as we start feeling worried, okay, the mind has started the worry channel now. The mind has started the worry channel. If we just identify that, now this does not necessarily mean that I'm not saying that whatever is happening in the mind is false. Sometimes there can be genuine causes for concern. Sometimes when I say resentment, it's not necessary that it's all just in the mind. Sometimes people may have done something which is bad and we have genuine grievances. But they need to be addressed in a healthy way, not in a passive way just by watching the mind's movie and letting ourselves feel worse and worse and worse. So becoming an observer of our inner world is one part of the solution that Krishna gives in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. When he talks about dealing with the modes, in the 14.5 he introduces the concept of the modes. And he describes the modes and their effects in 14.20. And then, in 14.21, Arjuna asks three questions. Arjuna vacha, kairlingai strin guna netan atito bhavati prabho kimacharah katham chaitams trin gunan ati vartate. He asks, kairlingai, O Krishna, what are the characteristics of a person who has transcended the modes? Kimacharah, how do they behave? So linga, characteristic, refers to internal characteristics. Achara refers to external characteristics. And katham chaitams, how do we transcend the modes? So while answering the first question, kair lingais, Krishna tells this in 14.22 and 23, prakasham cha pravrittim cha mohameva cha pandava na dveshti sampravrittani na nivrittani kaṅshati udasina vadasinam gunairyo na vichalyate gunavartanti tyeva yovatishthati nengate. This is prakasha, pravritti and moha. Remember, these are the characteristics of three modes: illumination, action and delusion. Goodness, passion, ignorance. Krishna says, these will arise in your consciousness. They will come and they will go. Na dveshti sampravrittani. Don't resent when they come. Don't hanker for them when they go. Udasina vadasinam. As if detached, observe them. Gunairyo na vichalyate, without being agitated by the modes. Gunavartanti tyeva, understand that this is produced by the modes. Yo avatishthati nengate, be situated as if detached, as if indifferent. Now, because it is happening inside us, we can't be entirely detached. Krishna doesn't say udasin, he says udasinvat. It is as if detached. So in English there are two words, disinterested and uninterested. The two can sound similar, but disinterested means not having any vested interests. Not partial, that's disinterested. Uninterested means not having any interest at all. I don't care for this. So if we say consider a cricket match. In the cricket match there is an umpire. The umpire needs to be disinterested, not uninterested. So the umpire and the players appeal, how's that? Then the player should not be on the side of the bowlers. Oh, every appeal I'll just give out. No, the umpire should not have any vested interest. But the players appeal, how's that? And the umpire says, I was not watching the match. He says, what? And what are you doing me here? Isn't it? As an umpire, you're meant to watch the match. But while watching the match, the umpire has to not just accept all the appeals of the players, nor reject all the appeals. The umpire has to evaluate the appeal of the players based on merit. Similarly, Krishna is telling us, become an umpire of your consciousness. Become an umpire of the emotions that arise within you. So, udasinavat, be disinterested, not uninterested. It's inside us, it's okay, the horror movie starts off. Now, there will be some genuine grievances which need to be addressed. So, yes, if I see a strange look in my boss's eyes, and immediately the worry movie starts off. Oh, what if you lose your job? What if you lose your job? Okay, what is the actual problem? The problem is that if my boss may fire me, well, what can I do about it? If I just do my assignment right now properly, if I'm doing my work properly, then my boss will not fire. Oh, that's the best I can do to prevent firing. Okay, let me start my work now. So there is a grievance which needs, there is a concern which needs to be addressed. So when we learn to distance ourselves, earlier I said, I don't identify with the mind, identify the mind. But after identifying it, we have to address it. It's not that we wish it away. So when I say the worry channel has started, the horror channel has started, the resentment channel has started, that doesn't mean we dismiss it. It simply means that we recognize that there are situations which need to be addressed. But they don't need to be addressed the way the mind is thinking it should be addressed. Because the mind is not addressing it. What is the mind doing? Simply going, starting the worry channel and making us feel paralyzed. There's a difference between worrying about the future and planning or preparing for the future. You remember earlier I said that the goodness and ignorance appear very similar. The similarity is that in goodness and in ignorance, we don't focus so much on action. But in ignorance, there is not even systematic thought. It's going back to the metaphor of the inner screen. In ignorance, the inner screen just goes off into the future and we don't even understand it's gone off in the future. We're just mutely watching it. And we get horrified. This may go wrong, that may go wrong, that may go wrong. But in goodness, we are in charge of the inner screen. Say, it's a window and the window is now changing into a TV. So we have the remote in our hands and we consciously decide. Okay, now is the time when I have to consider what are things that can go wrong in the future, and so that I can prepare for it. Then consciously in charge, we take the inner screen to the future. Okay, if this happens, then what can I do? Okay, I can do A, B, C. Okay, that's a decent plan. If this happens, what can I do? Okay, I can do this A, B, C. If this happens, I'm not yet prepared for it. Let me think, what can I do about this? Okay, I could do this. Or maybe I can ask someone else, I can consult some expert to know this. So when we are in charge and then we take the inner screen to the future, then looking at the future helps us feel more confident. Okay, if this happens, I can do this. And thus, in that kind of planning and preparing is healthy. It again, if you go back to the earlier dynamic of that, some things in our control, something not in our control. When we are in the mode of ignorance and the mind just goes out in the future, it just shows us one bad thing happening, another bad thing happening, another bad thing happening. And before we can think about how to deal with the bad thing, the mind has come up with another bad thing. So we basically look at all the things that are not in our control and we just feel powerless. But instead, if we focus on the things that are in our control, then, okay, if this happens, I can do this. So that way, we'll be able to deal with our inner world better. So this, Krishna talks about becoming this is in the yoga tradition called as the Sakshi Bhav. Sakshi means observer or witness. Be a witness of your inner consciousness. Sakshi Bhav. Bhav means disposition. Sakshi Bhav. And then later on in the same chapter, Krishna will talk about Seva Bhav. Seva Bhav is the service attitude, which he says is the ultimate solution for dealing with the disruptions of the mind created by the modes. That we'll discuss in a future session. But this becoming an observer of the inner world can help us from minimizing the unwanted disturbances that are created by the mind. So I'll summarize and we can have a few questions if you want. So I spoke today about, in the second session, understanding how our mind functions. So we did a thought experiment of how we can see an inner screen inside us, but we can't see the inner seer. But there is an inner seer different from the inner screen. So that inner screen is the mind, and the inner seer different from that screen is the soul. So in normal perception, the inner screen acts like a window and shows the outer scene. That's how we're able to perceive. But this inner screen is very versatile and very fickle. So at any moment, it can change from a window to a TV. And it changes to a TV, it just drives us wild. So if it goes into the future and starts showing all the wrong things that may happen in the future, we get anxiety. If we go into the, it goes in the past and shows all the bad things that have happened in the past, we get depression. So just as there are fixed channels on certain TV, on the TV, which are going to go on, and if we are monitoring someone, mentoring someone, then our children, we will not just get caught in the show that is going on. We will evaluate, which show is going on? Should they be watching it or not? So the same thing we can apply to ourselves, that when the mind starts, based on our past conditioning, certain channels will be there. And we can't stop the broadcasting of those channels. Those channels will be there in the mind, but we can choose whether we watch them or not. So I talked about how it's not just our activities that take our time, thoughts also take so much time. Now, one revenge fantasy can consume a whole hour, or can sometimes consume years for people. So for dealing with the mind, we talked about, first is, don't identify with the mind, identify the mind. Identify the mind means, whenever any thought, any emotion, anything comes up within us, rather than, I am feeling angry, the mind is saying, I am feeling angry. We preface it with, the mind is saying. Become an observer of the inner world, that's what Krishna tells about how to deal with the modes. And then, after we preface it, the mind is saying like this, then after that, we evaluate it. It's like the umpire doesn't just unthinkingly accept or reject the appeals of the players in a cricket match, but evaluates them. Similarly, Krishna says, Udasinavat. Be detached, as if detached. That means be disinterested, not uninterested. It's happening inside us, on our inner screen, so it matters to us. But not everything deserves to be given equal attention or equal credibility. So when we thus situate ourselves in our self-understanding as souls and then observe what happens on the inner screen, then the negative emotions that come up within us, they won't disturb us so much. If you identify, this is the worry channel, this is the fear, this is the anger channel, this is the resentment channel. Okay, instead of just watching the movie over there and getting disturbed by it, that's how our mood may change from one moment cheerful, other moment furious. So this mood changes because suddenly our screen changes from, inner screen changes from being a window to a TV, is broadcasting a particular movie. So if we learn to evaluate, then we will be able to save ourselves from unnecessary trouble. This whole process of acknowledging what is happening in the mind, but then not identifying with it, but evaluating it, how this can be done in a devotional context, we will discuss that more in our next sessions. So, do you have any questions? Okay. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, it's true. Sometimes we just feel bad, feel depressed, feel negative, but we can't identify any specific cause for that. Yes, sometimes it's as if we have a inner fog. When there's a fog, you just can't move forward. You just can't see anything. And a fog is difficult to fight also. What do you do with the fog? You know, catch it and try to fight it? There's very little we can do about it. So there are times when we get enveloped by a fog inside us. So at that time, first is Tamsa Tikshasa Bharata. That, now, I was talking with one psychotherapist, and he showed me a graph of how people deal with depression. So that graph was over 30 years, they looked at various studies, and they found there are medication. There are tranquilizers or antidepressants, which are sold in millions in today's times. So people take that, and that leads to, say, a certain amount of people getting freed from a depression. But then they showed almost equivalent result comes if people are given placebos. And if the people are not told that this is a sugar pill, told, okay, you're taking antidepressant, but they're simply given placebos. So it's barely a 0.1% less. So the question comes up, is it actually the antidepressant that are curing, or is it just the feeling within the person, oh, I'm giving the medicine, now I'll feel better. And then they showed there is psychotherapy. There's a difference between psychiatry and psychology. Psychiatrists prescribe medicines. Psychologists focus more on talking. And they showed psychotherapy also, not the same level, but a significant amount of people become free from depression even by that. And then the most amazing was time. If somebody has depression, 3 months they take medicine, they become okay. 3 months they take sugar pills, which are placebo, they become okay. 3 months they just go to psychotherapist and talk with them, they feel okay. But a significant number of people, almost 75% of the people who got well by the previous methods, they got well just by time. So when Krishna says tam sthitikshasva bharata, it's just that sometimes in the external world, there are seasons. Sometimes it just becomes too cold, sometimes it becomes too hot, too rainy. So, now when we are functioning in the world, we have to acknowledge, okay, today it's very rainy. But that doesn't mean that will stop us from doing what is important for us. We may take a raincoat, we may take a umbrella, we'll go out and do it. So, if we learn to treat, it's not easy, I also struggle when I'm saying all this, if we learn to treat our emotions like we treat the weather. We acknowledge it is there. Today the weather is very unpleasant. But I'll move on. If we decided that if we want to study and build a career for ourselves, if the weather is not good, I cannot go to college today. The weather is not good, I can't study today. Oh, we will not be able to do anything in life. So it's interesting in 2.14, when Krishna says Tam Sitikshasa Bharata, he compares the inner with the outer. He compares the emotional with the environmental. Matra sparshastu kaunteya sheet oshna sukha dukkha daha. So sheet ushna is environmental. Sukha dukkha is emotional. So basically, sometimes it's a foggy weather. And at that time, I can't just walk as clearly, as confidently, as swiftly as I might walk when the weather is clear. Just keep moving forwards. Do what we can. And over a period of time, the fog clears. The problem is that when some negative emotion comes, the mind first creates the negative emotion, and then the mind eternalizes it. Makes us think, this is how you are always going to feel. How can you live like this? You have to do something about it. But no, this is not how we are going to always feel. Sometimes we are feeling very dejected, just take a good nap, wake up, we feel better. Not always, but I'm just saying that the mood is very fickle. And just as the good mood disappears and the bad mood comes, similarly the bad mood will also disappear in due course. So at one level, it's tamas. If we can't diagnose specifically what caused this, then just understand this is the mode of ignorance. It has come upon me for some reason. Just do what I can in that situation. If we deny the weather, that's also not going to work. If it's rainy and I just go out without any raincoat, I just get a cold. So if I am affected by that inner fog, and the mode of ignorance is influencing me, denying it, no, everything is all right. That is also not going to work. But just because we can't deny something doesn't mean we have to succumb to it. We acknowledge it and do the best that we can in that situation. And if we have developed some practices which can get us to goodness easily, then that helps a lot. Now, of course, we can say chanting is there, but the problem with chanting, the problem with our chanting is that one devotee was recently asking, when I chant, it seems that my mind wanders all the more. So he says, why does this happen? I said, that's because we are not chanting. He says, what do you mean? I said, actually, What is happening is our tongue is chanting, our mind is wandering, and we are thinking which of the two to do. Which of the two to do. And for us, if you are not very discerning, the chanting appears to be same thing, mechanical, going on and on. The mind's wandering appears to be something new. Oh, it's gone here, it's gone there, it's gone there. So most of the time during our chanting, we go off with the mind's wandering. So it just remains the tongue chanting. That's why at that time, although chanting is a very powerful way to spiritualize our consciousness, sometimes it may not spiritualize our consciousness immediately. Eventually, steady chanting will purify us. So we have to find out what works for us. You know, sometimes we may have heard some good classes and made some notes, have got some nice quotable quotes or something like that. Just read that. That at least, oh, this is the mind. I didn't, that helps us, shows us some ray of light in the fog. So for some of us, it might just be kirtans. You know, just start hearing music and forget everything else. And as you keep hearing the kirtan, keep hearing the kirtan, gradually that Krishna sun rises and the fog dissipates. For some of us, it might just be go in front of the deities and pray to the deities. For some of us, it might be just we have a friend with whom we can talk. But we are not just here trying to do something which will get rid of the fog. We are trying to do something which is in itself important for us. And that also helps to dissipate the fog. So many times when this fog comes, people try to just somehow get rid of it, and that's why they may get into entertainment. Just watch some movies, just surf on the net, do this, do that. I'm just feeling so bad, I want to get rid of this bad feeling. But often, in trying to avoid those bad feelings, we do things which in themselves have no value. And then eventually, we get habituated to those things. And we become dependent on those things. So many times when people take alcohol, it's because they have some distress in their life, some stress in their life, they want some relief. Instead of managing those feelings in a healthy way, they develop an unhealthy habit to manage that. And that creates its own problem. So, we have to, at first level, just, okay, this is there, tolerate. And that means live with it and do what we can in that situation. Second is, if there are some valuable activities, intrinsically valuable activities, which especially help us to rise from the lower mode to the higher, we do that. That way, we can come out of that inner fog faster. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Now we will maybe go on till about 1:30, and then we'll start at 3:30. Is that okay? Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
Okay. Question: if many minds are working in a similar way, i.e., in the mode of ignorance or not filtering certain thoughts, and your mind is obviously more towards mode of goodness along with the actions, should you reveal your justification of filter criteria to those people who are in mode of ignorance,
okay,
so that they know what you're kind of thinking and why you're not doing certain things?
Okay.
And if you don't, then will you not eventually lead into anxiety and depression?
Okay. So if other people around us, their minds are working in ignorance and our mind is working in goodness, so should we tell them about how they are thinking and how we are thinking?
Because naturally in that relationship, they ask you why you're not doing this.
Or yeah, so they are acting in a particular way, we act in a different way. So if we don't tell them, then eventually they may keep pushing us and we may end up doing the same thing which they are doing. Yes, communication is good. But communication has to be done in a non-judgmental way. Maybe if they are not devotees, or even if they are devotees, instead of saying that, you know, if somebody is in Maya, telling them you are in Maya, that may not be very helpful. Because immediately ego comes up, you know, what do you mean I am in Maya? No, I have these reasons because of which I am doing this. Sometimes if you have a close relationship and they trust us, that might work. But instead of, with respect to dealing with it ourselves, we can give it a label for quick handling. Oh, that is a horror movie starting. But if somebody is worried, tell them, hey, the worry movie has started on your channel. That may come off as very insensitive, because they are worried at that time. So yes, if we are both talking the same language and if they understand what we are saying, that we are not being uncaring, we're just helping them identify their inner mind, that's good. But sometimes we may just otherwise give them some hearing so that they feel understood, and then we present our perspective. Sometimes we have a particular understanding of things and our understanding may be right. But our sharing that understanding with others will not be accepted by them unless they feel that we have understood them. If they feel that simply we are just labeling them and putting them in our own philosophical categories. Now this is behavior in the mode of ignorance. Then they just feel that you're not understanding me, you're simply judging me. So if it's a close relationship, if people have concerns, then they need to feel understood before they will understand. Just like if I have some pain and my body and I go to a doctor, and before I speak one word, the doctor gives me a prescription. Now, the doctor may actually be expert enough just by looking at my face or my body, the doctor might say, this is the problem with you. But if I don't feel understood, then I may not take that prescription. You know, maybe the doctor has not diagnosed me only properly. So of course, the doctor doesn't have the time to hear me hours and hours speaking, I have this problem, that problem, that problem. But the doctor has to hear the patient's symptoms and then give the prescription. The patients, to the extent they feel understood, to that extent they are more likely to understand what the doctor is doing and not just understand, apply the prescription. So similarly for us, when we are interacting with others, yes, we can analyze and we can find that certain behavioral patterns are in goodness or in passion or in ignorance, and we can try to elevate people's consciousness. But it has to be done in a way that is understanding and helpful, not a way that is just labeling and boxing people into categories. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Yes. So I was thinking we'll start at 3:30.
Okay.
Is that okay? Yeah, because this flow is going on now. Any of the Matajis have questions? Yes, bro.
Does bad mind mean bad consciousness? Could it be someone has good intention, but they've got a messed up mind? Someone may not have such good intention, but somehow they've got a very clear mind. Or is the mind
okay?
That's your consciousness.
Okay, good question. Is the bad mind the same as bad consciousness? Actually, this is a topic which I'm going to address in a future class, but I'll explain briefly over here now. If we consider the mind to be like an inner screen on which a certain movies, certain channels start off, certain images come up, then we could say a bad mind means that mind is inclined to have certain images come up. But it is up to us whether we watch those images or not. It is up to us whether we click on that video and keep watching it or not. So I can have a mind which keeps proposing, come on, do this, do that, do that, do that. But I can choose not to accept that proposal. So we could say that there is intention and there is disposition. Disposition refers to the way the mind tends to think. So the word disposition is a broad equivalent of, say, conditioning. But the word conditioning has a negative connotation. Disposition just refers to the state of the mind. So we could say it could be positive, it could be negative. A person with a Vaishya mentality, Vaishya disposition, mercantile disposition, as soon as they come to a place, even if it's a temple, they will not look at the deities, they will look at the temple. Hey, this must be a $1 million, £1 million property. Okay, that's what the thought will come first in their mind. Now, that's not necessarily good or bad, that's the way they think. So disposition means a particular thought comes in their mind. So somebody may say, okay, now they go in front of deities also. Hey, they look at the deity dress. Hey, this dress must be this expensive. And they say, okay, now this is deity, this is Krishna, let me pray to Krishna. I don't have to bother about how expensive the jewelry is, how expensive the dress is. So by our disposition, certain thoughts may come up within us. But we can choose whether to dwell on them or to not dwell on them. And if we dwell on them, then that disposition which is there, that will become our consciousness also. But if we don't dwell on it, if we dwell on something else, more constructive, more positive, then that disposition will be there, but that doesn't have to necessarily become our consciousness. So to the extent we accept whatever the mind is displaying on its screen, to that extent, that affects our consciousness. So, if I'm angry, or rather you could say that this person did like this and that is making me feel angry. So that anger is one symptom that is there within my consciousness. And I acknowledge, this person did this, this is making me angry. But if I identify with it, my whole inner screen becomes filled with anger. Otherwise, okay, this is there. Maybe I'll have to talk with them and clarify at a later time. When they are calm, I am calm. We'll work it out. So we note that it's like if it's an inner screen, a pop-up has happened. We say, okay, this is not to be, I need to take action, but not now. Just take it, minimize it and keep it with a reminder for seeing it later. So like that, we acknowledge and then we process it at appropriate time. So the disposition will determine what images pop up in our inner screen. But it is our intention which determines whether we go along with those pop-ups or we choose something else. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Ram. Okay. So if people are having difficulties at the mental level, are there some quick tips which can help them to deal with their difficulties? Yes, if we don't have much time, I would say the inner screen metaphor is something which is very simple to understand. We communicate that in a few moments. And whole world of mindfulness, whether it is cognitive behavioral therapy or acceptance commitment therapy or whatever, these all focus on the Sakshi Bhav. So mindfulness sometimes is equated with a Buddhist practice. But it's not exactly a Buddhist practice, it's a universal practice. Mindfulness, we could say, it equates with the mode of goodness, broadly speaking. Mindfulness means we are aware of our situations and we are aware of our emotions. That's broadly mindfulness. Okay, this is the situation and this is the emotion that is coming within me. I acknowledge that. Then I decide whether this is the way I want to act or I don't want to act this way. So, but becoming more self-aware, not so much in terms of self as the soul, but self-aware in terms of where the soul's consciousness is right now. So that is what mindfulness is. And if we explain the concept of the body, mind and soul, the mind as the inner screen, that helps in dealing with the agitations of the mind. At least it gives a visual metaphor which people can use. That usually if people are having a lot of anxiety or fear, I use the acronym FEAR, F-E-A-R, for dealing with it. So F is focus. Focus means, when I say this may go wrong, that may go wrong, that may go wrong. Focus means, what is the exact problem right now? So, no, oh, I may lose my job, oh, what will I do? What is the exact problem right now? Just ask this question again and again. So basically, we interact with the world in two ways. We take in information from outside and we do action. So, when we have fear, the mind is going in a haze. So, focus means, what is the exact problem? Okay, the exact problem is, okay, my boss looked at me with a strange look. What is the exact problem? Oh, the problem is, I have not completed my assignment. So what happens is, just like sometimes a patient may come to a doctor and say, oh, I'm in pain. Well, just saying that I'm in pain doesn't help the doctor. So the doctor says, okay, you're in pain. Where is the pain? Is it in the hands? Is it in the legs? No, I'm in pain. No. Okay, yes, I'm in pain, but where is the pain? So only when the doctor is able to zero in on the location of the pain, then the doctor can think of a treatment. So when worry is there, it's just this. So bring it back to the specifics. F is focus. What is the exact problem right now? Then E is engage. Engage means, what can I do about it right now? So what can I do about it right now? No, this may go wrong, this may go wrong. Okay, what can I do about it right now? Okay, I have not completed my assignment. Let me complete it right now. So as soon as we start doing something tangible, to a large extent, the fear's hold on us decreases. See, fear catches hold of us by making us, by disconnecting us from the immediate reality. But to the extent, if you see, most of the times when people worry, the psychologists have done a survey that actually when people are busy working, at that time they don't have the time to worry. It's only when they are at home, they are relaxed, now let me have my leisure time. During our leisure time, our mind works overtime. Like this problem, that problem, that problem. So basically, focus and engage, this gets the mind to the present. Now, what is the exact problem? What can I do about it right now? Then A is arise. Arise means realize that I am a soul. I am different from this. This is the scene out there. There's a screen in here. But I am different from all this. I am a soul. I am indestructible. I am different from all this. So when we raise our consciousness to a spiritual level like this, that itself calms us down. That we are the inner seer, different from the screen. What happens on the screen matters to us, but it doesn't define us. We are different. We are always different. Just like the sky is different from the various clouds and storms and everything that is there in the sky. Like that, the soul is different from whatever emotions happen in the consciousness. And R is release. This is more... So the first two, F and E, is basically to bring to goodness. A is to bring to spirituality. I am spiritual, I am different from all this. And R is bringing to bhakti. Release means that there are some things which are not in my control, but ultimately Krishna is in control. We may not use the word Krishna for new people, whatever. There is a higher plan, there is a higher purpose. Things will work out. So what is not in your control, let go, release. So when we release, this is the problem I'm doing, but what about this goes wrong, what if that goes wrong? Okay, that's not in your control, let it go. So when we actually let go of the things that are not in our control, then we can better take hold of the things that are in our control. Suppose there's a porter, and that porter is trying to carry a 30 kg weight. They're trying to lift it, they just can't lift it. They're trying, they're simply straining. Even if they lift it for a moment, it crashes down and they injure themselves. But they don't move that luggage, they injure themselves, they don't earn anything. But okay, the 30 kg, let go. There's a 10 kg weight, let me carry that. There's a 20 kg weight, let me carry that. So then, they move forwards. So, similarly for us, there are, in every situation that we are in, there is always something that we can control. If nothing else, we can control our consciousness. That means, what do I think about? So, if we let go of our thing, let go of the things that are not in our control, so that we can catch hold of our thoughts. And then we direct those thoughts where we want. So, this four-point strategy, focus, engage, arise and release. That is a very practical as well as a powerful way to deal with not just fear in particular, fear specifically, but also with any kind of trouble that the mind is giving us. Okay? So, we'll stop here, and if there are any more questions, we'll discuss in our next session, which we'll have at 3:30. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Tai Gaur Premanande.
Grace Chaitanya Prabhu ki. Yeah. So it is lunchtime. So.